That's huge news right there. I mean,
Paul Heyman is taking ECW to Monday Night Raw.
What the hell is this? Wait a minute, Joe.
What is it?
Ladies and gentlemen, the following contest is scheduled for one fall. Introducing first, the Zombie.
What is a rib? What is this?
I can assure everyone watching the world premiere of ECW on Sci-Fi that Zombie is, well, not an offering of ECW or Sci-Fi.
The Zombie?
Hey, look, I spend a lot of time at ECW. What the hell is this? I've never saw no Zombie. Look, he's an ugly looking yet. Look, ugly looking SOB.
Information, opinions, history, and most importantly, always real. This is Rant EM Radio.
The recognized symbol of excellence in sports entertainment.
The Shining Wizards Network proudly presents
the Turnbuckle Throwbacks Wrestling Podcast
with your hosts,
the Impact Playa, Phil Rea, and Dave Mega Powers.
Of WWE, there have been many so-called dominant tag teams, just like Axe and Smash of Demolition. We'll destroy Demolition! Or there's the Road Warriors. We'll throw them right off the road!
Hey, yo, Vic, what's the old saying?
What a rush!
More like, oh, what a joke!
We are the Ascension!
Welcome to the Wasteland!
Gentlemen and assorted lowlifes, it's 2015 and we are still your recognized symbol of excellence in sports entertainment broadcasting from the current to the way back. We are the Turnbuckle Throwbacks Wrestling Podcast. As always, your gracious host, the Blue Collar Scholar, the Impact Player himself, Mr. Phil Rea, and I'm joined by my tag team partner in crime,
the white lotus of the mega powers.
What is going on?
Oh, man. Still recovering from this amazing birthday weekend and Wrestle Kingdom weekend.
Ah, all right. So you were green to the gills on Sunday.
Oh, yeah.
All right. Well, Dave, we are live on Rant Entertainment Media, rantemradio.com.
We are live.
And we are a Shining Wizards Network production, as always. Happy New Year to everybody. It's been a great couple of days to the new year, actually. A lot of good, new, and exciting shit going on. Well, before we get into anything, I hate to start the show on a somber note, but the wrestling world, locally here anyway, lost a true talent and a giant of a man and a great dude. Timmy Arson was 38 years old, died tragically in his sleep earlier today, or I believe it was late last night. I'm not sure. I'm still getting conflicted reports. I met Timmy in like 1999 or 2000. He was managed by my buddy Matt Zombie. They were doing an indie show, and he wrestled for Johnny Rods and was trained by Johnny Rods along with my buddy Jay, my buddy Dave, and a bunch of other guys. And we weren't best friends. We didn't hang out, but every time I saw Timmy, I got a handshake and a hug. Fast forward about half a decade later, I move out to Staten Island, and the first year I'm here, I get on Twitter and Facebook, and I start putting stuff together for a podcast, and I see Timmy online. I hit him up, and, hey, how's it going? And he, you know, was like, hey, what's going on? And I said, I'm out here now, and we talked, and then when I told him I was getting the podcast going, he was so happy for me. And I said, once I get my shit together, and once I get all my equipment in, I'm have like a nice setting, because I was doing it out of a one bedroom apartment. And then when I got the house, he said, you got to come through. He's like, no problem. And he was doing some stuff with satellite radio, and he did a couple of interviews on with a bunch of people. And we never, like, our schedules conflicted. Fast forward to this past Thanksgiving week, he hit me up on Twitter, and I was like, dude, what's up? You got to come through. Happy holidays. He's like, yeah, man, after the new year, no problem. I'll come through. He had a son that's near Michael's age. I figured we'd all just hook up. And again, we weren't best friends, but we were cool. And he tragically passed away, and I want to give my condolences to Timmy, Timmy's family, his son, his girl. And I know Johnny's school, a lot of guys are feeling it tonight. So rest in peace, Timmy Arson. Timmy Arson was a good talent. He was the ECW Zombie, if you guys remember the ECW Zombie when Vince bought ECW.
Yeah,
he was the zombie.
He was in the first match, right?
Yes, he was. As you heard the intro tonight, I gave a little tribute to him, and I played that clip more specifically. And he had a hell of a run in Puerto Rico. A lot of people don't know, but he wrestled for the Colognes. He wrestled for MPW, a bunch of promotions down there. So Timmy had a really, really legit decent run in Puerto Rico, and he talked about that in length with me a few times on the experience down there. And that's why I wanted to get him on the show, because the stuff in Puerto Rico is just off the hook. You know how it is down there.
Oh, yeah, especially those cockfights that are for the pre-show.
So, you know, again, I didn't want to start 2015 off like that, but unfortunately, I got the news this afternoon around lunchtime, so I'm pretty bummed. Oof. So I just want to, again, condolences, and Timmy, we're dedicating this episode to you, and I know you're a big fan of the Strong Style as well, so this fits right into what we got going on tonight. So, all right, well, before we get into any of the news and the stuff that Dave and I have planned out, I just want to give you a couple of programming notes on the Rant. Go to rantemradio.com right now. The Royal Rumble contest is up. Click on that. We have the first annual Ranty Awards. I'm up for a few. Dave is up for co-host of the year. So, so if you guys want to vote for Dave and I, go to, you know, Ranty and Radio, click on there, and all my throwback is better do the right thing. Let's see.
Our fans always do the right thing.
I'm just reminding them that to do the right thing.
To continue doing the right thing.
Right. I called AA last night, and I said, listen, man, because him and I are both up for host of the year. And I said, I don't really win a lot of awards. I don't mind the accolades. And
so you asked him to rig the event.
No, what I said to him was that if he, in fact, does win, it's the equivalent of Jerry Lawler making himself USWA champ 27 times.
How many times has AA won the Host of the Year award?
No, this is the first annual, my friend.
Oh, my bad.
Tank is up for an award, too. I think he's up for caller of the call-in of the year or something like that. So,
well, Tank is always calling in, so he deserves that.
Yeah, so and apparently we're getting plastic statues and Golden Corral gift cards.
Really?
Yeah, so I mean, if you and I get at least two awards between us, that's $30, dude. We can definitely knock out a buffet with that.
Yeah, that's perfect for a buffet, too.
Right, exactly. So do that. Shining Wizards Network doing big, big things. We just added the King of the Indies podcast, hosted by the OG Prince of PMA, Kevin Gill, the Kevin Gill Show. Listen, man, take care of that. That's it's going to be good stuff. King of the Indies is probably one of the biggest events outside of what's not on television.
Mm.
It's a real big deal on the West Coast, so show them some love. Go to ShiningWizardsNetwork.com. Download the first episode they have up there, and go on iTunes, give it a good review, and help out our cause. So,
take a pause for the cause, as you always say.
I love pausing for causes because it's the right thing to do, Dave.
Why not?
It really is the right thing to do. All right, let's see. How are we doing with the chat room? I just put it up. Everybody in there? Everybody's no. All right, Matt's in there.
Dead or alive, you are coming with me.
All right. I don't see Scott Ness. I can't play his. Let's see what's going on here.
Tank is there.
Of course.
As always.
Yeah, Tank was doing some, what do you call it? What do you call those cartoons on Facebook? The, I forget what they're called. Like,
I don't know.
But he made a cartoon of him sitting in his room waiting for the show to come on.
I'll have to check that out.
All right, they're saying Dave sounds terrible on your end. On their end, I mean, I don't know what's going on. How do you sound? You sound good right here with me. You're all right.
I sound perfect to myself.
Yeah, you sound pretty good. All right. All right. So this is why we have nice things. Yeah, it's true, Tank. This is true. All right. Let's see. New T-shirt on ProWrestlingTees.com. I don't know if you guys noticed, but it was Dave's birthday over the weekend. And in honor of his birthday and in honor of all the Strong Style stuff, yeah, it's called Bit Strips. Thank you. ProWrestlingTees.com. We have a new New Japan parody shirt. Go get that. ProWrestlingTees.com. So it's purple and yellow at night. Thank you, Matt, for hooking that up for myself and the Mega Powers.
Thank you, Matt.
I did the network thing. I plugged that. Okay. So let's get right into...
So we can finally talk about...
Wait. You didn't see... Obviously, you didn't see Raw on Monday, right?
Oh, hell no.
Okay. Well... If you were listening a couple of minutes prior to the start of the show, I played a clip of the Ascension.
I did hear that.
Okay, now.
I've been hearing nothing but everyone bitching and moaning how this is a throwback gone wrong on their end. These guys are really, how can I word it? You know, scraping at the bottom of the barrel to make an identity for themselves. And they're trashing all the personalities that they're imitating. Am I correct?
You are correct. You know my big thing, imitation is the best form of flattery.
Absolutely.
And I don't mind that. You know, my beef, though, with them was that promo. And, you're hearing, like, conspiracy theories, like they're trying to bury him already. I don't know why you'd bring them up and try to bury him. That makes no sense.
Trying to kill his own product. But a lot of people have been, saying that about Vince and the WWE for, like, the longest time.
Dave, I like this team. And I told you this for a while, I like the team. They reminded me of the Eliminators.
Well, they have a similar finishing move.
Well, they do have similar move. And they're not the best-looking guys in terms of, physique, but they can go. They can legit go. Both guys are either near or over 300 pounds, and they're very agile for their size. The makeup is a bit much. They look like a cross between, Dhalsim from Street Fighter and, like, Mad Max meets the Road Warriors,
Yeah.
Which is what the Road Warriors were to begin with. But I agree with you. Why would you shit on your predecessors when you've had two matches in the big time on TV anyway? Because they've been doing house shows.
Yeah, especially when, you know, all those teams have really, you know, they've gone on to make history, and these guys are kind of like nobodies in the grand scheme of things. So for them to really talk down to not only are they talking down to legendary teams, but they're talking down to teams that can't even challenge them in the here and now. So why call out guys that are way past their prime or dead, you know, to put yourselves over? And not only that, but since, you know, with the network, you know, still around, you know, for young and impressionable fans, that would just make teams like Demolition and Road Warriors nothing special to watch on the network that's being promoted all the time on their show.
Again, I like the team. I just didn't like that. And, you know, you can't make comparisons to teams like them.
It's a different time, a different era.
Exactly, exactly.
And not just that, but, like, especially nowadays, you know, showing a wrestling fan that's like a young kid, you know, the stuff that's happening now compared to back then, you know, it's drastically different. You know, even, you know, I've tried to bring up significantly older stuff on this show, but it doesn't really catch on, you know?
Right. I agree. I just feel like it was in poor taste, and, you know, they could have, all they had to do was go into the ring TCB and that was it.
Yeah.
You have the talent. Somebody said on the page, oh, they need a mouthpiece. They definitely don't need a mouthpiece right now. All they got to do is go into the ring, beat up on their guys, and make a rep for themselves.
Yeah,
it's not rocket science. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, and these guys aren't like the best on promos, so you know the less they say, you know, the more they can display in the ring and get themselves over that way.
Yeah, pretty much. All right.
You know, I want to ask you a question. I haven't heard it yet, but I heard Ryback did an amazing promo a few weeks ago.
It was last week.
Did you get a chance to listen?
I did. It was last week.
And what was it about?
It was just pretty much him, and he kind of tongue-in-cheeked the whole CM Punk thing without mentioning CM Punk.
Okay.
And he just was pretty much, and he mentioned his former characters, the Nexus thing, the Skip Sheffield thing.
Mm-hmm.
They showed a clip. He showed a clip of him on Tough Enough when he lost. You know, his road back to television and his road back to WWE and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
Just very good, very well done. They're trying to put him in a main event spot. I feel. I don't know if he's particularly going to go in and take the. I guess I don't want to use the word brass ring, but. Because that's what they, you know, Vince said on Austin's podcast, but no pun intended.
Yeah,
I think they're baiting him to be a little more broad with the character, if that makes any sense.
So they're trying to give him more depth.
Yeah,
to his character.
Absolutely.
Which doesn't hurt.
No, not at all. And I believe the promo's on YouTube, so you can catch that.
All right, I'll have to take a look because. You know, the best promo I heard out of that guy was that promo he did when he was being gassed for his surgery.
they're saying that we're crackling. I don't know. Hold on a second. Let me turn this down a little bit. Maybe it's I don't know what's going on. I recently redid the man cave, and I made some additions, so I don't know if that's makes it. I'm going to turn down the USB connection a little bit, so hopefully they can hear us like that. Let's see. And hopefully it won't crack anymore. But anyway.
You know, what would a Turnbuckle Throwbacks episode be without some sort of technical difficulties?
Dude, it's been all right the last couple of months. I haven't done anything retarded. You were here on Sunday. It went over well, right? We had a good show.
That's true.
All right, we had a good show. Everything was good to go.
I remember anything going wrong there.
Right, so it's probably just a connection maybe. I rebooted the computer. And... That's pretty much it. I apologize because we're good on this end. Maybe if I hold on a second, let's try this. Let's see. How about that? If I turn this down a little bit, maybe, and then I turn that up a little bit, maybe that'll work. I don't know. Anyway, all right. But you can still hear me, right?
Yeah, I hear you perfectly.
All right, so we'll do that. I'll try to turn that down. Hopefully, it won't. All right. So. let's get into some news and notes, and we have a really cool throwback for you guys tonight.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, this is fun stuff. Really fun stuff.
And we got to do a little review of what we thought of the Wrestle Kingdom.
Well, yeah, that's what we're going to be getting into.
Very good.
Since the audio is crackly, I'm doing the best of Mr. Brell audio clips. Oh, thanks, Matt. Thanks a lot, Matt. Thank you. Thank you, Drive Through.
You jock ass.
You jock ass. All right. So, Wrestle Kingdom, obviously, over the weekend, it was a huge success in terms of, I heard there was some good buy rates and some, there was good feedback from the masses. People putting it over like crazy. People oohing and aahing over it. I mean, obviously, because not only was it a good card top to bottom, but it was an English commentary, so people understood what was going on.
Yeah, and I think, you know, regardless of how good the product is, there's always going to be people who, they just want the English commentary. You know, it's important to them because, I don't know, they're so used to hearing their own language, even though, you know, it's pretty fun to hear, you know, Japanese guys screaming and shit like that at the action. You know, they want to hear American guys screaming at the action. And, you know, even with Jim Ross, you know, I heard a lot of feedback concerning Jim Ross was, you know, they were, him and Stryker were a bit slow, you know, at the beginning. But then once they started catching on a little bit, especially during the Minoru Suzuki versus Sakuraba match, you know, JR was back in prime form there. And like as the night continued on, they did really well. You know, I didn't catch this at first, you know, maybe because, you know, we're talking, you know, me and you were watching the pay-per-view together. We were talking, bullshitting, eating some amazing food that your wife cooked up for us.
Yeah, wife.
But
right.
Apparently there was like a few points where Stryker was using some insider terminology and Jim Ross was doing his best to kind of put the kibosh on Stryker doing that. Because I heard that there was one point where Stryker was like, oh, he's trying to swerve him. And then Ross made this tongue-in-cheek comment of, I've never been swerved, but I've been lied to before.
Nice, nice, nice. Fantastic.
And there was like a few, you know, moments throughout the pay-per-view. I didn't notice it, but, you know, a lot of fans caught on. And there's kind of like a, if you look hard enough, you'll find a lot of fans kind of, you know, broke it down. Even Meltzer, you know, brought up a lot of that stuff. I read his review of the show before coming on here. You know, he had nothing but glowing reviews for it. But at the same time, you know, a lot of people are curious, you know, does this mean that New Japan is going to be, you know, a runner-up for, you know, number two or number one promotion in the world? And, you know, they're still a far cry from doing anything like that. But, you know, this was a great, you know, resurgence of their product on a global scale. You know, obviously the product is, you know, going to be more geared towards hardcore wrestling fans. It's not going to be I don't think it's really going to break any new ground for, you know, non-wrestling fans or wrestling fans. It might, but I'm pretty sure that percentage is going to be still very, you know, tiny at this point. If anything, with some luck, you know, with how well this pay-per-view came off, you know, word of mouth, you know, is probably the best form of advertisement you can have for anything. So, you know, just from my perspective, I really hope it does catch on. Will it be number two? I don't really think so, but it's a great start. And I already hear that there are talks about there's going to be an English version of New Japan World, and they're looking into getting English commentators for the website. So that's in the works, or at least in talks right now. So we'll see where that goes. You know, they're already I already heard some rumblings about like what some of the episodes are going to be for. What is the network that they're going to be on? AXS.
Yes, Access TV starts next week. It's 13 weeks. It's going to be an hour show. I think Josh Barnett is hosting it. I'm not sure. Yeah, okay. So I got that right.
It's going to be Josh Barnett hosting. There's going to be a lot of older matches on there. And I believe the Okada-Tanahashi match from Wrestle Kingdom is going to be possibly the first episode. So if you didn't get to see it. You'll get a chance to see it on there. And there's going to be a lot of matches that are related or kind of like in sync with Wrestle Kingdom 9 to make, you know, help fans, I guess, make more sense of, you know, why these guys were fighting and, you know, to get some more background on the product,
yeah,
which I think is a neat idea.
I think it's cool. If anything, and I mentioned this a whole bunch of times, if you're a fan of the Strong Style, you know, or you want just an alternative to what's going on, then definitely check this out. Definitely check out. And if, you know, you have $2 a week, go get New Japan Pro Wrestling World. It's like the equivalent of the WWE Network. It's literally $2 a week. And it's in, if you use Google Chrome, it's in English. They translate it for you. And Dave even said there's instructions on the bottom of the webpage.
Yeah, if you go to the bottom of the web, if you go onto the bottom of the page, there's actually a Google Translate button, which does a bit more translating than the Google Chrome web browser will. It doesn't give you better translation, but it just translates certain portions of the website that wouldn't that weren't being previously translated before.
Yeah.
So it's a more extensive, more thorough translation of the site. It's still going to be, like, really bad, like, broken Japanese because there aren't any translators that or at least web-based translators, let me rephrase myself on that point, that are going to translate the language perfectly. That's not going to happen, at least not anytime soon.
Right.
But you will be able to, you know, understand the site a bit better. You know, obviously you're going to see who's facing who, and that's, at the end of the day, that's really what matters.
Yeah, and that's pretty much it, you know. So check it out. We'll definitely be checking it out.
So, what was your favorite match of the pay per view?
The Intercontinental Title match. That was my favorite for Wrestle Kingdom. I mean, the main event. The main event was a
sleeper hit.
Yeah, the main event was amazing. I just thought the IC title match was that more intriguing. I thought it told a better story than the main event, even though the main event was pretty cool in its own right.
Yes. Nakamura versus Ibushi for the Intercontinental title.
Yeah.
Meltzer ended up giving that 5 stars.
You're very heavy.
Definitely was a 5-star match.
You're very heavy on Meltzer lately, Mega Powers. What's up with that?
He's been the authority for so long, and he's you know, one of the guys who, you know, if you read the magazines and all that kind of stuff, you know, he was like the international guy.
Yeah, he was. And
he has more in-depth information about this kind of stuff than, you know, anybody else.
Yeah, exactly.
And actually, it was from his review that I found out that Nakamura's ring attire when he was coming down the aisle was actually inspired by, I think it was King Zarkon from Voltron.
Oh.
So I haven't watched Voltron since I was a kid, so I didn't even catch that reference at all. But that was pretty cool to, you know, read that in the review. And a lot of things that he wrote in his review made a lot of sense. Apparently, one thing that I noticed while I watched the original broadcast was they didn't do an intermission. Usually, doesn't matter what show they're doing for New Japan or pretty much like any Japanese show for that matter, there's always an intermission. You know, it's like usually about like a half hour long there. Recapping what happened in the first half, you know, they're having some press conference interviews. You'll see some funny commercials for stuff that the wrestlers are hawking. And that didn't happen. You know, the event went straight through, and it went for almost 4 hours. Usually these events go anywhere from like 4 to 5 hours long. So, you know, from what I was reading, you know, it was intentionally done, you know, just so the show can move along. You know, so people wouldn't get bored. A lot of matches were cut short, which I didn't kind of notice that. But, you know, you don't really get a full grasp of it until, you know, after the fact. But regardless of the matches being cut short, it was a phenomenal pay-per-view. You know, a lot of people had a chance to watch a full, you know, New Japan event without, you know, skipping through, you know, matches on YouTube or Daily Motion. You know, so it was a great opportunity for fans to, you know, really, you know, get an idea of what these shows are all about. And also, you know, speaking of Daily Motion and YouTube, you know, I've been reading also that with the New Japan World, you know, making its presence known, New Japan is going to start cracking down more heavily on Daily Motion videos and YouTube videos.
Well, yeah, they're going to have to police that because that's where we've been getting our.
Yeah,
I mean, if I'm, I mean, the torrent site that you sent me months back. I mean, I get my stuff from there when I can't get it. But like, as soon as the event was done on Sunday, even our UK brethren, they were posting stuff from there, and I stayed off the internet the entire day. I was like,
That's hard. That's hard. You know, especially with like an event that was being hyped by. Solely by, you know, the internet wrestling community, the IWC. You know, it's very hard to go onto Facebook or any form of social media without getting, like, you know, notice of who the fuck won these matches. You know, for the last several years, you know, I've been very heavy into New Japan and also Dragon Gate. And it really grinded my gears to go on Facebook the next fucking day, whether it would be like the New Japan Facebook page or somebody else. And like all the results are like right there as soon as you log in. I was like, oh, come on. Can't you just like wait 3 months for me to get the DVD on IVP?
When I watch Raw more regularly and they were out of the country, I even didn't go on social media. This is before I had the podcast, obviously.
Like, I know it's, like, it's getting hot to a point now where you can't bitch. Like, well, I don't want to say you can't bitch and moan about spoilers because people are just going to post them anyway.
Yeah, but you know what, though? We're kind of busy on our social media pages with the show, so it's kind of hard not to – you know, we're pretty interactive with our fans, so – and we got guys in different time zones, guys in different states. Matter of fact, our buddy Nick from Baltimore, Nick – sent me the link at 2 o'clock in the morning for the English feed. Somebody had it up on the site already, live, and I didn't want to watch it. I put it on, and I was like, I'm going to try to cheat, and I fell asleep within the first 10 minutes of the first match. Mm. When I'm kind of glad because, you know, like I said, the next day you came over and it was fresh to me, and
it's also tough too because you know, a lot of this stuff is happening. A lot of people want to break the news of what's going on. Like, you know, for instance, Cody Hall joining the Bullet Club.
Yeah,
even though
good segue.
He's not going to be wrestling anytime soon. The guy's still in the dojo.
Yeah, good segue. That was the next thing I had on the list.
To my knowledge, like, from what I'm hearing, the guy still, like, can't work a match properly. So he's not going to be in the ring, you know, for any matches anytime soon. But still, you know, them announcing, hey, you know, we have a new member. He's going to be our young boy.
Yeah, it was cool because the next day at work, after not being at work for 12 days, I was dragging ass. And I logged in and I watched New Year's Dash on the New Japan Pro World.
Yeah.
And the Bullet Club was involved in a bunch of different tag matches. And when Anderson made the announcement, right before Anderson made the announcement, Gallows called Cody Hall into the ring. Cody had his dad's click gear on and stuff, you know?
Yeah.
And it was pretty funny because he walks in and Gallows pulls out a Bullet Club t-shirt and says – he goes to hand to him and he pulls back and goes, no, man, you got to earn this. And then Anderson makes the – Carl Anderson makes the announcement, like Dave just said, that Cody Rhodes. Cody Hall is indeed a young boy. They call him Young Lions now, right? Young boy sounds too homosexual. I'm sorry.
Plus there was a photo that I found recently of Taguchi with one of the young boys, like, in bed with him.
Oh, gross.
It was professionally shot, but I have no idea. Me and a lot of other people that are, you know, Japanese wrestling fans, they have no idea what the fuck these photos are about.
Yeah, the culture...
incredibly homoerotic.
The culture there, if you guys have the New Japan Pro World, you'll get a glimpse of this. Case in point, the Friday night before the event, I'm on my couch watching TV with my wife, and I'm on the laptop at the same time. I call it a laptop. It's whatever it is. I'm just getting old. I'm on a computer.
Netbook,
whatever the fuck. Anyway, I'm on my MacBook, and Dave sends me a message. He goes, they're doing an event, like in an hour. I'm like, really? He goes, yeah. So I put it on, and I see a half hour of nothing, right? It's a half hour of the ring being empty, and then the funniest thing happens. I see a commercial for a Nintendo Wii game that it's like almost like a Rock Band type thing, but except you're banging a drum with a stick, with sticks.
Yeah.
Right? And so now the commercial itself is almost like 6 minutes long, right? So now,
yeah, it's a pretty in-depth commercial.
Right. Well, yeah, it's Nintendo, and it's a big thing. Nintendo's a big deal in Japan still.
Yeah.
So
it's their product.
It's, yeah. So my wife's like, what are you watching? I'm like, it's this crazy Japanese commercial about a Wii game. So no more than 5 minutes after I say this, the Rainmaker himself comes out to play this game with the fans at the event. Apparently it was like their version of a WrestleMania fan fest.
Yeah.
And it was like, apparently it was like 6 hours long, and all it was guys coming to the ring cutting promos. That's, and then Okada playing his Wii game. That's,
yeah. It was 6 hours long.
6 hours long. But
I ended up watching all 6 hours.
Yeah, you're better than I am.
I don't know why, but I watched all 6 hours. Probably, you know, I was talking to myself throughout the 6 hours of this, telling myself, like, okay, I'm just going to watch one more thing, just see what happens, and then I'm going to go to bed. And that, like, one thing turned into watching the next thing, and then the next thing after another. Like, they did some, like, strange I don't want to say strange, but it just dragged on for, like, an obscene amount of time. Like, they did, like, you know, they show, you know, photos from, like, matches of, you know, wrestlers doing, like, funny faces or whatever, and they were, like, rating them on a scale of 10.
Yeah.
And I was like, all right, this is really stupid. You know, but like I just kept watching, and then they brought in these like gravure like idols. Like there was this one chick with huge tits. So I was like watching that, of course. And then I was like, okay, after this, I'm going to go to bed. I'm going to jerk off, and then I'm going to go to bed.
Negative. He stayed up.
I stayed up. I heard that there was going to be two matches, so I waited for the matches.
No matches.
And finally, the matches happened, and they were just like whatever matches.
Right, they were just throw-ins because, you know, how do you keep – and you know what's cool? The crowd stays there. It's not a thing where, you know, they're not disinterested. They'll – I mean, that place –
No, they stayed there the entire time.
The place was packed.
And there was like some – little gymnasium. Like some where they took like breaks, but like after the breaks, everybody came back.
Right. So
me and all these Japanese people stayed and watched this stuff for 6 hours.
Right, exactly. All right.
But still, it's kind of like – a lot of the stuff that they offer on there is very unique, you know, for something like that. You know, they're not showing, like, the matches that are happening at, you know, WrestleMania Access on the network. Who knows? They might do that. But, you know, they showed the full event, as far as I know the full event, you know, on their network, New Japan World, which included matches, which was great. And, you know, several hours before the pay-per-view, they showed, like, the ring construction.
Yeah, I saw that.
You know, granted, you know, watching a ring being built, you know, I've seen that happen plenty of times. But, you know, I guess, like, for, you know, fans that, you know, are curious about these kind of things, you get to watch them, you know, set up, you know, the ring and the background for the Tokyo Dome, which is still pretty cool. When that went on for an hour. I admit I skipped through that because I couldn't, you know, handle just hours of nothing happening.
Right. You know? Right, right. Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
But still, it's like really cool that they're offering this kind of stuff. If you want to watch it, it's on there. If not, then you have like all these frigging live events that are available for people to watch. Like they got like another three live events, you know, on New Japan World, you know, before the end of this month.
Yeah. Just they have a calendar. And they give you the times when they're going to be broadcasting it. And obviously, there's a huge time difference. So, unless you're a freak and you have insomnia, then you go watch them live. If not, then do what we do, and you watch them on a replay.
Yeah.
So it's pretty cool. Moving on real quick before we get into our Facebook questions. I caught Pro Wrestling Syndicate's first episode on WLNY this past Sunday. Really good production work by our by the birthday boy, Mr. Eddie, Shining Wizard. Yes. Eddie, happy birthday to you, brother. You did very well. I thought, and they played the matches from when you and I were there in September. A lot of that stuff went down leading up to what's going on recently with them in storylines. If you're a fan of Pro Wrestling Syndicate, if you're a fan of any wrestling, period, just, you know, do it. Follow it. It's fun. It's a nice little promotion. They're getting some notoriety. They got some big stars that come in there every month, and they pack the place. I mean, the last show I was at, the Christmas show, was standing room only. The main event fell apart, but shit happens.
You know, not bad for the number two promotion that runs out of Rahway, right?
Great. All joking aside, congratulations to Pat Buck, Eric Pleska. Those guys, I think, far exceeded what they thought their expectations would be of this Fed. They're doing really good stuff over there. Their next show is January 30th. I'm sorry, 31st. January 31st, Frozen Fallout. Our brothers, the Midnight Jury, will be doing a podcast from the event. So if you guys are going to the event, anybody local, go say hello to Adam and Mike. Midnight Jury has a website, too, now. I think it's WLWstudios.com. You can get the shows on there as well as the SWN. Go to ShiningWizardsNetwork.com. Go to WLW Studios. All that happy horse shit. They're going to be doing that. And should be a fun night if you're going. I know the Rock and Roll Express are going to be on the card fighting I think they're fighting the tag team champions of PWS, the brothers there. So check that out. Should be fun stuff. All right. Want to get some Facebook questions?
Yeah, let's get down to the nitty-gritty.
Yeah. About time. I missed broadcasting live. It's been a couple of weeks there, Mega Powers.
Well, technically it was Sunday.
Well, I mean, like our show, not Durant doing the other thing, you know. Let's see. A lot of nonsense on the feed this week because of just the bullshit pictures I put up and the guys having the fun. Okay, here we go. Scott wants to know, watching Ring of Honor the last few weeks, what's the significance of the streamers? I recall ECW doing it a while back when they had the Japanese wrestlers come over, but I don't get it for the ROH guys every match.
Japan.
Well, that's it. That's it. One word.
That's it. They do it all the time.
Out of respect to the Strong Style. That's what Ring of Honor based their honor code on. Part of that was the Strong Style mentality. So, Baza wants to know, where would you place Tatsumi Fujinami in the pantheon of Japan's all-time greatest wrestlers?
He's definitely at the top because, you know, he was coming up through, how can I word this? I mean, he was a big name during the Inoki era. He was, WWF, junior heavyweight champion, which was the junior heavyweight title in New Japan. You know, had some great battles with Dynamite Kid and you know, graduated into the heavyweight division. Couple time IWGP champion. He's the main eventer for the Dome show that we're doing tonight. And infamously, when I was a kid, one of the first wrestling magazines that I had, it was reporting results from the it wasn't like an official Starcade, you know, that we would have normally on a December, but it was for the Starcade tour in Japan, which I believe was in January of, was it? Yeah, it was like early 91 and before Flair went over to WWF. And there was a controversial victory on Fujinami's part because he was the IWGP champion. Flair was the NWA World Heavyweight Champion. He managed to get the three count on Flair, but during the match, he threw Flair top rope. So we had a dusty finish there where, you know, Tatsumi Fujinami was declared a unified champion. The title was stripped from him, and it was determined on the very first Super Brawl. So there's a little history lesson for you that Tatsumi Fujinami's technically the first IWGP champion to unify the NWA title, even though it's technically unofficial.
So it's safe to say in the top five, it would be him, Inoki,
Ricky Choshu,
Great Muda,
and Giant Baba.
Baba, and what, then I guess Chono after that?
Yeah, Chono's definitely in there.
All right.
He came up with Muda.
Right.
As okay. Young boys.
Sugar Shane wants to know, with a lot of dismay and hate for the Ascension, do you think they will get out of this rubble? Also, for tag team wrestling, what would it take to get a better tag team division in WWE? Of course, better teams.
I think just more teams in general.
Yeah, more teams in general.
Better of like varying, you know, quality, because you're going to need some shitty teams. You're going to need some in-between teams. You're going to need, you know, top shelf kind of teams, and they all got to, you know, mix in. Like if WWE, I don't know how many tag teams they have right now, but if they had anywhere from 10 to 15 tag teams, you know, whether it ranged from guys that, you know, they're just married together and they're always together to, you know, some guys kind of throw together, it would be amazing. Tag team division, but you know, we talked about this several times. There's a lot of guys that are just kind of in it for themselves, and granted the nature of pro wrestling, you know, that's the norm. You know, a lot of guys don't want to, you know, team together as a tag team. You know, they want to break out on their own, whether they actually deserve that or not.
And like I mentioned before, the Ascension get out of the rubble if they just let them go to the ring and do their thing. They don't need to cut promos about other teams and all that other shit.
They don't have to dress up like other people.
They can. They just don't have to talk as much as they do. There's no need.
What do you think of their get up right now?
If they just tweak it, I don't mind it. I like the fact that it's the whole imitation, best form of flattery, blah, blah, blah. I like all that. I think, you know, you have to be different. But in the same breath, how much more unique can you be? I get the premise of what the team is all about. I like the music. I like them. They're not bad wrestlers. I could see if they were, like, shitty wrestlers with a not-so-good gimmick, then, you know, you could spit all the venom you want. But they're not that terrible in the ring. I've seen a lot of them on NXT the last several months, and I think they're good. I think they're going to put on some good matches with teams like the Usos and, you know, the Mizdows of the world, and also Cody Rhodes and Goldust, and, you know. And as far as tag teams, like, and I just want to add to what Dave was saying, how about getting teams that you know are going to have bona fide stars in them, so when you do break them up, you could push the next generation of wrestlers, a la Bret Hart, a la Shawn Michaels, that kind of thing. You know, there are a bunch of talented guys that are sitting at mid-card level that could get a nice boost if you throw them in a tag team program for a while, and then split them up, and then give the guy to push to the moon if you know he's going to come correct.
Yeah.
That's how I look at it. I don't know. I mean, they're never going to listen to us anyway, so who cares?
Yeah.
And that's pretty much the shtick of it. You want to add any other news before we take a break and get into our throwback?
Is there any other news? I really haven't heard much new news other than, you know, what we talked about.
Yeah, no, I mean, nothing's going on. The Rumble's in a couple of weeks. I know.
What are you looking forward to for the Rumble?
I'm looking forward to another my new decor in the Decadome. We're gonna have more seating and some snacks, and hopefully you can come over and a bunch of other of our friends can come over and hang out with us. That's what I'm really looking forward to. I like the Rumble though. I always did. Like you mentioned, last year was very predictable, but yeah. You know, I think it's more about the event now and around the event and what we're doing now with the shows and stuff. I think it's just what makes it more interesting, and it's going to be a fun time, I think. Hopefully, again, this time we don't know what's going on. They brought back Roman Reigns. They brought back Daniel Bryan. Now they threw Seth Rollins into the title match at the Rumble. So there's a lot of possibilities. They can either really wreck this or make this really appealing for a nice build up to WrestleMania.
Mm.
So, I mean, let's hope for the latter, obviously.
Let's hope Sting comes back.
Hold on a minute, Dale. We got a breaking news here. Hold on a minute. Good evening, Turnbuckle Throwbacks. Hello?
Hello, konnichiwa.
Ah, konnichiwa, Maniac Matt.
Konnichiwa, hey, this is your On the Road Report. We are celebrating the throwback tonight, so we are at the Happy Fun Time Super Buffet. How is everyone doing?
We're doing swell, my friend. How was your holiday?
It was delightful. Well, we got a packed house here. We got funaki out here. We got kimchi. And then we've got Curry Man out here doing wasabi shots with everyone.
Ah, Curry Man, Ichiban.
Oh, always spicy.
Always spicy.
And oh then we've God. Got we've got Jimmy Wang Yang out here doing some pony rides with the kids out in the parking lot.
Oh,
that doesn't sound
right, sure. But yeah, okay.
Hey, it's a Japanese tradition. Who am I to complain?
Absolutely, sir. Absolutely.
And then we have the Mr. Fuji kimono contest. So come on out, wear your favorite kimono, and we're gonna judge it.
Fantastic.
Oh, it's great out here. And then the phrase that pays out here tonight is if you say Dave Mega Power sent you, they're going to hook you up with a special foil-wrapped white weasel meat.
It's
delicious.
Yeah, had to get white weasel in there, huh?
Got to get it in there. So we just want to say Happy New Year. We're going out with a bang out here. And just remember, just like this buffet is just like Turnbuckle Throwbacks. You'll get full real quick, but in a half hour, you're always going to want more.
That's right, ladies and gentlemen. Hey-o! What's your favorite show, your favorite naked teen station?
Turnbuckle Throwbacks.
Thank you, sir.
Konnichiwa.
Arigato gozaimasu.
Thank you, Matt. That dude's the best, man.
I love the fucking music in the back.
That dude is aces, man. Dude is aces. We got to get him a fucking t-shirt. All right, ladies and gentlemen,
get him one of those Golden Corral gift cards.
We got to get him the new Throwbacks t-shirt. Ladies and gentlemen,
if one of us wins, well, we got to have like a best caller. Well, wait a second, that's Tank's thing. Maybe Matt
well,
and Tank.
How about we make a New Year's resolution and keep it? How about we do our own award ceremony this year at the end of the year, so we can give out some prizes?
So we can give out some Golden Corral gift cards.
Golden Corral, Golden China Buffet.
Is there a Golden Corral around here?
There's one in the Bronx. I don't know about you. Have to look up Jersey. I have no idea.
Yeah, we might have to take a long trek if we win our Golden Corral gift cards.
Word to Big Bird. All right. Let's plug our friends, play some silly commercials, and we'll be right back. We have a kick-ass throwback for you. Ladies and gentlemen, Happy New Year. We are the Turnbuckle Throwbacks Wrestling Podcast. We're back in two shakes of a weasel's tail.
That reminds me, saying that word, I forgot about there is some news, some bad news I have for you, Phil.
Bad news for me?
Yeah.
What was
specifically
that?
Specifically for you.
What's up?
On the January 5th New Japan show, that is the last appearance of Alex Kozlov for the time being. So the Forever Hooligans will not be wrestling in New Japan.
What happened to Kozlov?
I just heard that his contract is up and they're not renewing him.
No shit.
Yeah. The man has gained significant weight, so I don't know. There's some issues on that guy's end or what.
So the team will not be together in Japan.
No.
That sucks.
At least not New Japan.
Right. So and Rocky is well liked there, and he's been under a mask for a while and done some other stuff with them, so he's pretty safe.
Yeah, as far as I know, he's still, you know, part of New Japan, but Alex Kozlov is out.
That sucks.
Yeah.
Wow. Well, I know my new favorite tag team this year will probably be the Red Dragon, just by their last couple of matches they've had. So,
and they had an all right match on the New Year's Dash show too.
Yeah. Ah, man, it's terrible.
Yeah,
just fucking terrible.
All good things must come to an end, Phil.
Oh man. Anyway, all right. So we're back. Sorry about the mishap down the live feed. My iTunes player was not cooperating apparently while I was downstairs getting a beverage. But hopefully it wasn't that long. It came back upstairs finally. But anyway, I'll fix that on the download, I think. So All right, let's get into our throwback of the week, shall we?
Yeah.
All right, let's get the music going. Where's my music? There it is.
And now, here is your throwback of the week, sponsored by the Shining Wizards Network and Rant EM Radio.
You still get depressed when you hear the music?
Yeah. Still, I don't know, it's just such a sad song. Maybe because, you know, all the random deaths that happened in that company.
I'll throw back this week. Takes us back to January 4th, 1992. It was the first ever Dome show held by New Japan.
Not the first ever, but the first January 4th Dome
January
show.
January 4th Dome show.
Or at least the first one that they really...
It's their first big... It's their first big... Yeah.
Yeah.
It was called the Super Warriors. It was in the Tokyo Dome, like I just mentioned. And it would start the tradition of their biggest show of the year on January 4th, making it their Super Bowl, or I guess their WrestleMania.
Yeah.
This one particularly, though, was in conjunction with WCW.
Yeah.
Which
I think like the couple ones after this were WCW, co-promotions as well.
Right. It came and it had Dade. Brought it here as the New Japan WCW Super Show number 2. Show through our crazy numbers, it drew 50,000 spectators for a gate equivalent of $3,700,000 at the exchange rate, obviously.
Yeah.
12 matches, including 2 dark matches held before the pay-per-view broadcast began. 6 of the 12 bouts featured wrestlers from WCW. On the show, Lex Luger successfully defends the WCW Heavyweight Championship against Masahiro Chono. Main events saw, Dave mentioned before, Riki Choshu and Tatsumi Fujinami. And the match unified the Greatest 18 Championship and the IWGP Heavyweight Championship, like Dave mentioned.
And you know, we actually talked about the Greatest 18 Championship in the past.
Yes, we have.
It was the former WWF Martial Arts Championship.
Yeah. And the Japanese heavy metal band Shoya performed live between matches and performed theme music for the match where the Great Muta and... the Great Muta and you know who, Dave. Who, Dave? Who is it?
Sting.
That's right.
Surprised you didn't play the clip.
No, I was going to. I wanted you to say it.
One more time.
You know, nobody likes partying more.
That's right, the Rockers. Shut up. Fucking Marty
Jannetty. We know the Rockers.
That's right. Oh, boy. Yeah, Sting and the Great Muta wrestled the Steiner Brothers. Okay.
I got a question to ask you first.
Yes, sir.
How did you feel, watching these matches on New Japan World with the entrances cut off?
I don't like it. I like the entrances.
Yeah. Even though, you know, New Japan at this time was starting to become more, sports entertainment inclined. I know New Japan is very heavy on not paying royalties for original music, you know, similar to, our very own Mr. McMahon. But it really sucked that you couldn't see the entrances. For these guys, because, you know, especially in 92, like their entranceways were light years ahead of what WWF and WCW were doing at the time.
Which is why I'm pissed off that I don't see it.
But they had the huge entrance that like they have for WrestleMania 9. Granted, they didn't have all the Vitrons and stuff on. But it would be, like, that huge, and they would have, like, insane amounts of lights, and, you know, these dudes just come out, and the fact that there's, like, this fucking heavy metal band that I never heard of playing music in between matches, I want to see that.
Me too.
But it does not take away from the great action that happened at this event.
But now the Super Show on an – I haven't watched Super Show 2 in a long time.
Mm-hmm.
Do they show the entrances on that?
They probably
edit them,
probably,
right?
For that, they probably took select matches. They probably only took the WCW New Japan matches.
Right, right. Okay.
And they probably did show the entrances for that.
Okay. All right, let's get into the card. There were two dark matches, like I mentioned in the opening. Black Cat, who was Eddie Guerrero, right?
No, no. Who was
Black Cat?
It was a Mexican wrestler, but of he looks very Japanese. Black Cat, you're thinking about Eddie Guerrero when he was Black Tiger.
Right, right. You're
Black
right.
Cat was a guy named Victor Marr. Well, and we actually talked about him on a previous Dome show that we covered last.
That's right. That's right. You're right. Yes. Yeah. Yes. Okay, I remember now.
But his opponent, Hiroyoshi Yamamoto,
yeah,
is somebody that we all know and love. Do you recognize who that gentleman was?
Remind me.
It's Tenzan.
Ah.
He is significantly skinnier because he was like a young boy, young lion at that time. But when I was watching that match, I was like, oh, man, that ugly-looking head. That looks so familiar. And, you know, took a look at it further, and I was like, oh, shit, it's Tenzan before he was Tenzan. So it was Black Cat
defeating Yamamoto.
The future Tenzan.
That's right, Hiroshi Tenzan at 10:28. Your second dark match, Osamu Kaido and Kuniyaki Kobayashi defeating Kentaro Hoshino and Kengo Kimura. At 11 minutes.
No, I got to admit, I don't know.
I don't know any of these guys. Oh, no.
The only guy that I
do know is
Kobayashi, because he had many significant matches with the original Tiger Mask, and he was known as the Tiger Hunter. Those matches I really enjoyed because there were a lot of guys who, when they faced Tiger Mask, especially guys like Black Tiger, as much as I love a lot of those matches, a lot of those dudes, with the few exceptions, you know, with the exception of, you know, Dynamite Kid and maybe like a very few other names, like when they had matches against Tiger Mask, a lot of these guys, it just seemed like they were having the same match. And, you know, at the point, you know, at that point in time, you know, the original Tiger Mask, Sayama, there was nobody like him at that point. There was nobody who could, you know, imitate what this guy was doing. But Kobayashi was, you know, on a similar Dynamite Kid level where it seemed like he actually would kind of learn from their previous matches and, you know, different things. And, you know, he was trying to take the mask off and, you know, things of that nature. And Kobayashi is also significant to me, at least, for being the man who has the first match against Jushin Thunder Liger for his debut as Jushin Thunder Liger. A little history for you right there.
Right. So, but your next match was with Jushin Thunder Liger.
Yeah. Right. Who was the WCW light heavyweight champion at the time.
That's right. He beat Brian Pillman, right?
Yes.
Okay.
For a very brief time.
So it was Akira Nogami, Masashi Ayagi, and Jushin Thunder Liger facing Norio Hanaga, Hiro Saito, and Super Strong Machine.
Super Strong Machine, we all know and love from early 80s WWF, or I should say mid-80s WWF.
Right.
He's very strong on the house show circuit. They were using the machines' masks.
Yeah.
Bill Eadie was one of the machines.
Yeah,
and they would have like guest machines like Hogan.
The Hulk Machine, the Piper Machine. They had Giant Machine.
Yes.
They had... What was that?
Go ahead.
Yeah, they had Super Strong Machine as well.
Yeah. So he was the Super Strong Machine was the originator of this gimmick. You know, they brought it to WWF with some success on the house circuits, and he even did some of that stuff in Japan. Andre did the Giant Machine gimmick in Japan as well.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, this match was pretty pretty decent. Hiro Saito was actually in the 15-man New Japan Rumble.
That's
before
right.
The Wrestle Kingdom 9 show.
Yes, he was.
Which was not exactly the best Rumble ever, but, you know, he was one of the legends. And your boy, the great Kabuki.
Kabuki, are you a soldier? Yeah, I like gimmick battle royals, man. They work. It's fun.
Yeah.
It's fun, even in New Japan.
Similar to the now. Well, I don't know, the last couple Rumbles, and I even mentioned this on the Facebook page, not to get too off track, but they haven't been all that great, and some of the guys that they've been popping out, you know, as you know, special guests, whether they're legends or, you know, guys we haven't seen in a while, they haven't been all that impressive. But, you know, for New Japan, pulling out Kabuki and Hiro Saito, who is Saito is the king of sentons back in the day. You know, before there was the fucking Hardy Boys doing the swantons, and I don't know, a lot of senton people are kind of escaping me right now, but Hiro Saito was the king of the senton back in the day.
And they pick up the win at 15-12. Again, decent match.
Akira doing the dragon suplex.
That's right. Your next match was the Enforcers, Double A Arn Anderson, and Old Man Karate Larry Zbysko.
The Cruncher, Larry Zbysko.
The Cruncher, Old Man Karate, taking on the team of Shiro Kushinaka and Michiyoshi Ohara.
What'd you think of this match?
I thought it was very sound. Similar teams, you know. Anderson and Kushinaka both, you know, working on the body parts. You know how Anderson does it. I think this is very...
Yo, Larry Zbysko was loud as fuck.
He was loud as fuck. And,
keep in mind, you know, Japanese fans, they don't really... they're not the loudest crowd, despite the 50,000 strong at the Tokyo Dome. When you hear Larry Zbysko screaming throughout the Tokyo Dome, it echoes.
Yeah. Again, sound match. This was the first of six WCW matches that were involved in this Super Show.
And this is when the, you know, so we didn't really say too much previous matches because there really kind of isn't too much to say. They're very kind of, you know, the event itself just kind of builds up. You know, the first couple matches were literally nothing special. They're pretty hard-hitting matches. They're kind of just straightforward. Nothing really to kind of pull out from those matches to really kind of dissect. But this is the first match where things really start picking up because from what I can tell, you know, granted, you know, I wasn't watching Japanese wrestling in 92. Most people in the U.S., but you can tell that there was kind of like a transition period going on. You know, at this point in time, to my knowledge, All Japan Wrestling was the shit. You know, they had fucking Misawa, Hansen, Gordy, Williams at that point. So they were the thing. New Japan is legendary, and we're going to get into why, not to, you know, in the next couple matches, but...
So Anderson and Zbysko pick up the win at 12 minutes and 32 seconds.
With the spine buster.
With the spine buster. All right. Your next match, the Rhodes family, Dustin and Dusty, defeating old school Kim Duck and Masa Saito. Yeah. Kim Duck. He wrestled in WWE.
He wasn't just Kim Duck.
Yeah, he was Kim Duck all the time.
He was the man known as Tiger Chun-Li in the WWF.
Yeah, but he was also Kim Duck in the WWF as well.
I remember him
as Tiger Chun-Li.
Tiger Chun-Li.
Yeah, well, he changed his name, but same guy. Kim Duck and Masa Saito, if you don't know who Masa...
Fuji's
old tag team partner, former WWF tag team champions.
Fuck yeah.
This was okay. I mean, everybody in the ring was that borderline geriatric except for Dustin.
I thought it was funny that they were calling him Dusty Rhodes Jr.
Yeah, well,
for this match.
Yeah, because they didn't have...
It's kind of like a... that's just how they do it in Japan. You know, even David Hart Smith is known as Davey Boy Smith Jr. in New Japan right now.
Yeah, even Carl Anderson mentioned that, you know, he put over Cody Hall when we opened the podcast tonight with them announcing it on the New Year's Bash card. New Japan, Japanese wrestling, period, is very big on lineage. Huge, whether it's with the American wrestlers, the Gaijin, or it's or Japanese wrestlers, they're huge on lineage. So if you're a second, third generation wrestler, and you can wrestle, it's really good to them.
Yeah.
Right.
It's so. it's name value whether the guy is good or not. And chances are when these guys spend more time in Japan, they get significantly better. I know a lot of people were kind of shitting on Cody Rhodes for a bit. But first of all, you know, the guy's not wrestling. And everybody's like bitching and moaning, like, oh, Bullet Club's going to turn into, NWO from the 90s because they have all these guys. But all those Japanese factions have like a million guys in them anyway.
Before I get into the card, I got to revert to the Bullet Club one more time. Who is the Bullet Babe? Who is that blonde with the big ass?
That's Gallows' wife.
Oh, my God. Jesus.
From what I hear, she's going to be more involved with the Bullet Club.
Did you see the shit locker on her, dude? Jesus.
She was all right. She wasn't
No, forget about her face. It's all about her ass. Forget
she had a nice ass.
She did have a nice ass. Anyway, All right.
So, Dustin Rhodes versus Saito and Kim Duck, who... I'm just remembering that. Actually, Tiger Chun-Li was also Mr. Fuji's tag team partner as well.
Yes.
As his last run as Mr. Fuji.
Yep.
As a wrestler.
As a wrestler. That is correct.
So what did you take away from this match?
It wasn't terrible. I mean, it's, you know, all these guys are veterans. Dustin's the young kid, the young lion, I should say, trying to get in. I think it went a little too long, though. I thought, anyway.
Yeah, it seems a bit awkward because whenever Dustin got in the ring, he just got his ass whipped.
Yeah.
Granted, the pin with the bulldog on Kim Duck, but like he's just getting his ass whipped this entire match. You know, keep in mind, there's like three veterans in the ring, and there's one like young guy who's in his early 20s who's in the shadow of his father at the moment. I thought it was funny when Dusty Rhodes was getting in the ring. And he was being Dusty Rhodes from the U.S. He wasn't, like, getting into the wrestling thing. He was being
gimmicky
Dusty Rhodes. Shucking and jiving.
Yeah, yeah.
Dancing in the ring. Acting the fool. And the fans seemed to be into it. You know, say that much.
Yeah, I thought it went a little too long for my taste. But it was okay. I mean, it was just nice to see the guys in there.
And, I do want to point out, When Dusty initially goes nuts, he did take it to the extreme by slamming Saito on the platform and doing the bionic elbow on the freaking platform, which was a big deal. You know, I want to throw that out there. Back then, you know, with that really long ass catwalk, whether it was WCW or New Japan, when guys like did moves on the catwalk, that was so cool.
Well, yeah, well, it was cool anytime you see it outside of the United States. Yeah. Because the area around it isn't...
Well, like, WWF didn't have catwalks.
No, like I said, it was a thing where it was unique, and when they took it outside, it was interesting, so...
Yeah, especially when Muda would go down, like, run a freaking mile down the catwalk and then charge with a freaking clothesline.
Yeah, and I don't know if you noticed, but... The next couple of years when they would show stuff like this, and then when WCW incorporated, the camera work got better because the camera work is shitty when the guys take it outside because the cameramen have no clue how to handle that at that point.
Yeah.
But they learn because you just, you know, trial and error, mm-hmm. sort of like with this podcast, and that's pretty much it with that. All right, your next match.
The slab of beef.
Yeah, the tough slab of beef, tough man.
$2 steak championship has been... Tony Howe. And these two men are going to decide the winner.
Tony Howe, you know him better as Ludwig Borga, taking on Scott Flash Norton in a slab of beef death match.
In the shoulder block, clothesline, body slam challenge.
Yeah, probably the stiffest match on the card.
Yeah.
there's really nothing else to talk about like that. I mean, like Dave said, clothesline, shoulder block.
There's a few things to talk about. Like, there's some, while watching this match, like, besides the shoulder blocks, besides the clothesline, there were, like, a few things that I noticed that were worth mentioning. Like, there's one point where Norton goes for the slam, and Tony Holm just starts, like, repeatedly punching him in the kidneys.
Yeah, well,
and looking at these two, you know, meteorites of men, like getting kidney punches from Ludwig Borga.
And Tony Holm was in the same realm as Bad News Brown, as they were some of the only guys initially to start getting into the mixed martial arts scene at this point.
Yeah.
Before it became, you know, a global phenomenon. They were doing it big time in Japan with Pancrase and K1 and all the other stuff going on over there.
Yeah, and mixed martial arts was in Japan at the time.
Yeah, it was big. It was a big deal.
You know, years before it caught on here.
So Ludwig Borga gets the win at 8 minutes and 41 seconds.
Yeah, I thought it was you know, funny. There's one point during the match where Scott Norton is like clutching his chest, and I'm like, this dude's gonna have a heart attack in the ring.
Yeah, you know, for some reason, I was always a big fan of Scott Norton. I liked him from Jump Street, like the look. You know, he's just a big, stiff guy. It wasn't nothing spectacular. I just admired him from...
No, he was the, you know, the few legit, like, arm wrestling champions that were in wrestling.
Right.
You know, there was guys that did, like, the arm wrestling challenges, like, you know, Superstar Billy Graham, Jesse Bosley, Ventura, Ivan Putski.
Yep.
You know, and, you know, Hogan even did, like, an arm wrestling challenge with Andre back in the day. You know, a lot of guys did that gimmick, but, you know, off the top of my head, the only guys that were legit, like, arm wrestling champions were Rick Rude and Scott Norton. And there's actually, like, a classic little tale that Jericho talks about in his book. And if I ever directly get to meet the man, I want to ask him, because he brings up in the book, it's like, hey, if you ever meet me, you can ask me, you know, how to do this. And, you know, during his time, WCW, or it was either WCW or Japan, you know, he was hanging around Scott Norton a lot. And, you know, Norton apparently taught him how to win any arm wrestling, you know, challenge, you know, with this trick that he showed him. And I've always been curious what that trick is. So if I ever run into Chris Jericho, I'm going to ask how to do that arm wrestling trick so I could beat anybody.
Anyway, the next two matches are probably the worst matches on the card. Let's be honest.
Yeah. These are another heart attack, clutching your chest kind of matches, too.
Seventh match of the night, Shinya Hashimoto fighting.
One of the three musketeers along with the Great Muda and Masahiro Chono.
Right, three musketeers.
In Japan Pro Wrestling.
Right.
Three guys who came up in the ranks together.
That's right. Hashimoto is not a bad performer at all, but his counterpart has a lot to be desired. Bill Kazmaier, nice guy, legit tough guy, legit power lifter. He won all those World's Strongest Man competitions. I believe he was even an Olympian at one point. I'm not that sure. I know he was Rick Steiner's partner for a fill-in for that tag tournament, which was god-awful.
Yeah, that was a really bad tag tournament, and they had like all those international teams, and
right, but they tried making Bill Kazmaier a wrestler, and it just wasn't happening. But Bill was big at this point in WCW, and they put him on the card.
Yeah,
And
he was filling the token strongman gimmick,
right, against Hashimoto, who tried to make him look good, but I got nothing out of this match.
No, this was a really shitty match. You know, a lot of due in part to Kazmaier, because you know, another thing I want to throw out there for Japan, you know, Japan, as great as it is, they're also known for just kind of, especially at this time, you know, just in like the toughest looking badasses, you know, in the ring, which doesn't equate into, you know, history making matches. It just, you know, just for their sake, you know, especially at this time, you know, what I mentioned earlier with what was going on in All Japan, you know, with, you know, MMA being popular at that time, you know, even with, especially, you know, Inoki still in power in New Japan at this point. And, you know, the guy's very heavy on, you know, strong dudes, you know, guys who can actually wrestle, you know, stuff like that. You know, just trying to fill in the tough guy, you know, image that these wrestling promotions were putting in at the time. You know, strong style was huge at the point. It was the norm. and you know, throwing fucking slab of beef like Bill Kazmaier in the ring with you know, established guy would go on to win several IWGP championships, as well as the All Japan Triple Crown and the 0-1 title. You know, just, you know, on paper, I guess at that time it seemed like it would be something interesting, but you know, it was a bunch of just power slams, bear hugs, torture racks, you know, just anything to show that Bill Kazmaier is, you know, a strong son of a bitch. But at the end of the day, it was just wearing out both guys, you know, like this slap challenge that we had previously. It's basically guys just beating the shit out of each other until they're too fucking tired to perform. And, you know, what that equates to is, you know, let's get the match over with, you know, as quick as possible. And Shinya Hashimoto hits him with not one DDT, but two DDTs. And Hashimoto was known for, you know, the running DDT, and he hits him with that, gets the win. Kazmaier's pissed and, you know, attacks him after the bell. I know there was, like, some awkward point where I think Bill Kazmaier was thinking that he was going to win because he attacked him after the bell.
Well, it was either that or he was just trying to get over. You know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah,
it make, you know what I'm saying? Because it didn't. Again, it wasn't a good match.
No,
it wasn't a good match, and probably I think Kazmaier just
was there.
Like, Kazmaier's like, you know what? I'm going to play the heel.
Yeah,
and you know, just try to attack him, which made no sense at all.
No.
So,
and they just kind of stare at each other awkwardly, and the ring announcer says, "Well, Hashimoto's your winner."
If the chat
everybody
room
starts clapping, and Bill Kazmaier has like this look on his face, like drats, like does like the snap, like, "I can't believe I lost." Like, what do you expect?
If there are people still listening in the chat room, can you just give us a consensus of how it sounds? I'm getting real paranoid now about the audio on this particular episode because of the whole static thing and all this other shit.
Yeah.
It may not be a good upload, so I apologize for that. I can't control that for some reason. All my levels are good. It might be just a connection.
Make sure that you can hear this episode.
Yeah, no, I just want to make sure that, and then, you know, people download this a lot, so I mean, I want to make sure it's okay. I'm going to try to tweak the audio when it's over, but all right. Moving right along, the next crappy match on the card. Big Van Vader, one of my all-time favorites.
Yeah.
Putting up against the Giant Gonzalez, a.k.a. El Gigante, a.k.a. another failed WCW Ted Turner experiment.
Yeah, you know, for guys that don't know too much about El Gigante, you know, this was kind of like WCW's attempt at creating their own Andre the Giant. At least when I was a kid, that was what was coming off.
This was a Ted Turner experience. It was a Ted Turner experience. And, hold on. Good night, pumpkin.
Good night, honey bunny.
All right. I love you. I'll see you in a few minutes. I'm almost done. This was a guy who was an Argentine basketball player, had terrible knees, did not make it in the pros, got a tryout with the Atlanta Hawks at the time that was owned by Ted Turner.
Yeah.
Ted Turner's like, oh, let's make him a wrestler. And that's what they did. They made him a wrestler.
Well, they tried to.
They tried to. And they put him up against
his opponent.
And his opponent is Big Leon White. You know him better as Big Van Vader.
You know, I want to throw this out there, especially since we're doing a New Japan event. This guy was huge over there.
He was insanely huge. And I mentioned that a while ago because he had made his debut earlier that year in WCW with the Great American Bash.
American Bash 91.
Yeah, beating up on Tom Zink.
Yeah, fucking ass raped him in the ring. You know, destroyed him kind of match.
If I can just get it. If we ever do one of those Legends of the Rings and he's there, I'm going to make sure I have an extra couple of bucks on me so I can get a picture of him with that gear.
Yeah, I just took a picture of the helmet that he had and I didn't bother, you know, paying $20 to that dude.
You got a nice picture of it?
Yeah, I have a nice photo of him.
You got to send that to me.
I'll dig it up. One thing I want to throw out about Big Van Vader was, first of all, when he came to WCW, they promoted this man as champion of three continents at the same time.
Right, because he was catch wrestling, right? Wasn't he?
Yeah, he was, I think it was like CW in Germany. Yep. He had a title, he had the IWGP in Japan, and I believe a Mexican title as well. But there's one, you know, significant thing I'd like to think about there concerning his time in Japan. When the man made his debut in New Japan, he defeated Antonio Inoki in less than 5 minutes.
That match is on New Japan Pro World, right?
I believe so.
Yeah, you got it.
He destroyed him. Keep in mind, you know, Inoki and professional wrestling in general in Japan, it's still promoted sport. Even though people know it's fake, it's promoted as a sport. Inoki, especially at that time, and even now, like, he's still huge. The guy's a fucking god over there. No doubt about it. And for him to, for Vader to defeat Inoki in that short amount of time, from my understanding, it caused a fucking, like, near riot at the venue. I believe it was either the Budokan or Sumo Hall. It was one of the two. It was a place that New Japan was promoting shows. Like, it was like one of their spots, you know, right. Similar to, you know, a lot of people see Tokyo Dome, a New Japan spot, Sumo Hall or Budokan. I forgot which one it was. That was like one of their spots. And the disruption amongst the fans that Vader defeated Inoki in such a short time caused such a stir that they actually banned New Japan from that location for years.
Because of the,
they can still,
because
like,
of the riot they incited, right? Yeah.
What's that?
Because of the riot they caused.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Okay. So.
So Big Van Vader
is a big was a big deal there.
He was a big deal there. Caused a lot of controversy. He was beating all the big names. He was at that time probably the first, if I recall correctly, the first Gaijin IWGP champion.
There's been five Gaijin, right? It was him.
Six.
Him, Lesnar. What's that?
They don't count. I know they do not count Kurt Angle.
No, it was him, Lesnar.
Scott Flash Norton, Bob Sapp. I think there was like some random Russian MMA kind of guy.
Oh, that was his name. Damn it, I forgot already. But yeah, they mentioned the other night on Wrestle Kingdom, didn't they?
Yeah, of course AJ Styles.
And AJ Styles, okay.
Yeah.
All right, so Van Vader and Elegante had a double disqualification. It was
this match was like 5 minutes long.
4 minutes, 49 seconds, you're close. Yes, Matt, that Bob Sapp.
The only thing that this match manages to get across to fans was that Elegante was awful because Vader just beat the shit out of this dude.
Yeah. I think Vader, I could be wrong, but it looked like he was almost insulted that he had to fight this this non-wrestler.
Ignoramus.
Yeah. I don't want to shit too much on Elegante. You know,
I heard the guy was really nice.
He's one of the nicest guys in the world. Yeah. Undertaker at one point mentioned he enjoyed him. And their program, so like I don't want to shit on him, but he's not a very good wrestler.
Shit on him.
Yeah. So
you know, there's double count out. Vader just does not shit. He more or less pummels the guy. The guy's like 3 feet taller than him, and he just pummels this dude. And to add insult to injury, while Elegante's is like down on his knees on the catwalk, Vader drags him over to his Vader mask with the horns and just proceeds to blow the steam in his face.
Yeah.
And, of course, Elegante does a horrible job of selling that he's blinded by the steam.
Right, because he's not. He's just getting a nice facial at that point. All right, so moving on.
Yeah.
Your next match, number 9 on the card, Antonio Inoki, the legend, facing Hiroshi Hase.
Who
the up-and-coming buck at that point.
Yeah, this guy was, I guess, you know, if you want to, you know, put it side by side, not completely, but, you know, with Okada versus Tanahashi, or
No, yeah, you can. I guess you can make that comparison. Tanahashi being the elder statesman. Yeah. Okada being the 20.
Inoki. This was billed as a dream match.
Yeah.
For this card. It was the first of two dream matches. And, you know, Inoki is the far established senior to Hiroshi Hase's, you know, up and coming, you know, position in New Japan.
You get two spectrums on Antonio Inoki. You know, you get the he should have retired a while ago, and then you get the other side of it where people talked about, you know, in magazines and stuff, and with other fans that were into that was a no in strong style at that point, like in when I was in high school and right after high school and in the mid 90s, that he was, you know, the bee's knees.
Yeah.
I didn't, even though the match was short for this quote unquote dream match, like Dave just mentioned.
Yeah.
I thought it was okay. It wasn't terrible.
Yeah, I thought it was really decent, and it showed an interesting dynamic for the match, and that was, you know, we just discussed that Inoki is, you know, the legend, and Hase is, you know, it's kind of like make or break for him during this match, and you could tell that the guy is kind of hesitant, you know, very nervous for this match, because there's a point, you know, in the beginning of the match where the feeling out process is happening, and there's a point where it seems like Inoki's just kind of leaving it open so Hase can do something, and he's not taking the opportunity that Inoki's leaving for him. And, you know, in that point, he fucking seems like he reprimands him.
Yeah, it was
not
like
making
that, like that the missed spot. Yeah.
Yeah. And he just fucking, you know, digs right into him. He does like this kind of I remember, you know, seeing this move in like No Mercy and, you know, WrestleMania 2000, where it was just kind of like this sleeper hold, and he fucking like jerks on his neck real quick and just lets him go.
Yeah.
It's kind of like a crunching, like, rear naked joke.
Yes.
And he does to him.
So.
And just kind of like beats on him until Hase, you know, has to answer back. And, you know, on Hase's point, you know, the guy fucking fires back with some headbutts. He starts taking the match a lot more seriously. And that's when the match really gets going.
Yeah. So the match only goes about 10 minutes, 10 seconds, 9 seconds.
Yeah.
And again, I think this was just a case of, like Dave mentioned, Hase just not, I guess they didn't click like they were supposed to.
Just, you know, just seemed like the man was nervous. You know, this was
it was a big deal for him. Yeah. So again, still wasn't terrible. You could really tell that Inoki was the band leader. You know,
worse in this match.
Right. So
there's one point where that I really liked, and you know, Inoki gets his famous Royal Octopus Stretch on Hase. This was like another key point in the match where it's kind of like, you know, this guy's got to, you know, power back, because first of all, you know, from a fan's perspective, you know, could kill the match. From Hase's perspective, it could just fucking kill the guy's career.
Yeah.
And Inoki gets the Royal Octopus Stretch on him, and Hase just has like this pissed off look on his face. It says "fuck it," and, you know, crawls over to the ropes, gets the count broken. You know, another significant thing that really put Hase over, that like, hey, this guy's going to be even bigger down the road, was he took several of Inoki's enziguris, or as we like call it, the ghetto blaster.
Yep.
Hit him with a fucking, you know, ass ton of ghetto blasters, and the dude would not fall down. And, you know, the guy took tremendous punishment, took Inoki's famous enziguri several times. Inoki gets the Royal Octopus Stretch back on, and finally Hase concedes, and Inoki takes the win.
So this sets up the, I guess, the triple crown, the triple threat, the main events of the evening. What everybody can't...
The final three matches?
Yeah. The next match probably is my favorite on the card, only because I'm a fan of all these guys. Taking nothing away from the main event, because the main event was... Again, these matches were... What bothers me is that the last three matches, the least favorite out of the last three matches was the longest. And, I you know, not that the matches didn't tell any good stories. I'm just saying, like, I'm disappointed. Like, the matches didn't go longer, you know?
Yeah.
Your next match, 10th on the card, the great Muta, the legend, the man, the myth, nothing short of amazing. I am a huge fan of the great Muta, as I wear my brand new Hulk Hogan themed shining wizard shirt.
Nice.
Which was Muta's move that my kid emulates now to his stuffed animals, which is amazing. Yeah, Mikey does a sick shining wizard. Ask him to show it to you next time you come over. He will demonstrate.
All right, we'll have to see his shining wizard.
He's got a stuffed frog that's like. Almost 2 feet tall, you know, and he'll sit him up and he'll yell like "Shining Wizard!" and he bounces.
Well, 2 feet is perfect for the Shining Wizard,
right? For him, anyway. Yeah. So the Great Muta and Sting, against the Steiner Brothers. Now the Steiner Brothers are red hot at this point. Sting, obviously the flagship of World Championship Wrestling, didn't have to be the champion. He was the Hulk Hogan of WCW, quote unquote. And this was
also from Venice Beach, California.
Yeah, a good card. It was a good card so far, but a good match. This was a very, very good match. Muta spent a lot of time in the States. People don't realize that he was in the States prior to his WCW run. He was the Ninja in World Class. So Muta's been. Did the rounds. So he's worked with all three of these guys at one point in the game prior to this.
Also a key part in that we covered, Starrcade 89 Future Shock.
Yes. So he was in the tournament.
At one point was an undefeated NWA television champion.
That's right, until Arn Anderson beat him. Did Arn Anderson beat him? Did he beat the Great Muta? It was on TV.
No, I think it was
You sure about that?
I think it was Sting who beat him for the title. No, wait, no.
No, Double A beat him.
Sting won Future Shock, so that led to the world title shot, right? And then he got injured.
Yeah.
And then they did the whole Four Horsemen thing, right?
Right, yeah. So
I think I'm pretty sure he beat Arn Anderson for the title.
Chat room, help me out with that, please. I don't feel like.
Oh, wait a second. I think he beat Sting for the NWA title, and then he lost to Arn Anderson.
Yeah, but I think Arn Anderson beat him for the TV title.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah, okay.
I think he beat Sting for the television championship first.
Yeah. See, we don't do Wikipedia and all that stuff. We do it from memory.
Yeah,
we try to.
Our
anyway.
Easy ass memory at times.
Yeah, but listen, you know it's. We're still the best. All right.
Still the number one show on the network.
Anyway. good match. Very sound.
A lot of, this was, the Steiners in their prime. You know, they were a couple time IWGP heavyweight tag champions. Definitely at their prime of fucking DDTing people off the top rope. Double underhook power bombs. Suplexes galore.
Yep, they got the
fucking huge slabs of meat, and they can.
Yeah, everybody got their spots in. Everybody got their spots in, And
what was your favorite spot in this match?
The what do you call it? The Steiner line is there's nothing better than their clothesline. It ranks Rick Steiner's clothesline ranks up there with Stan Hansen's, dare I say JBL, Nikita Koloff. I love Rick Steiner's Steiner line. Love it. I mean,
my favorite spot in this match. Well, I got two. One is the, how the match ended. But first, my top spot for this match is Muta is doing his patented
springboard.
Yeah, his springboard cartwheel.
Yeah.
Into the corner, Rick Steiner catches his ass
and German suplexes him. Yeah, I like that too.
I don't think I've ever seen somebody catch Muda while he was doing the cartwheel before.
Yeah,
but that was it. Rick Steiner was just like,
Steiner's a great team, man. It's just
Steiner's at this point. They didn't take shit from anybody,
dude. They were so stiff. Like almost every match they had was a strong style match, even in the States.
Yeah, there was, you know, another point during this match that I found like another oh fuck part of the match was, you know, he belly to bellies Muda on the floor.
Yeah,
and it's just like, oh my god. And you know, granted, you know, I haven't wrestled a match. I have trained with Chikara Pro before, but yeah, I can only imagine what it's like to be dropped in any fashion onto a very, you know, thin gym mat on a concrete floor.
It's got to hurt.
And then get back up and continue on.
Yeah, it's got to hurt. It just, you know, it's the price you pay to be a pro wrestler, a strong style pro wrestler.
To be after tights wearing a championship belt in front of everybody.
You are not lying.
No, sure not.
Talk about the ending, Dave.
All right, Scott Steiner goes for a tilt-a-whirl suplex that he performed earlier in the match. Sting reverses it into a pinning predicament into a cradle. Same time, Rick Steiner belly-to-bellies the Grey Muda and pins him. Referee counts 1, 2, 3, but he counts Scott Steiner's shoulders to the mat,
right,
and has his back turned to Rick Steiner. So your winners are Sting and the Grey Muda.
At 11 minutes and 3 seconds.
Which was a pretty, you know, unique ending. Granted, you know, there's been tons of guys, you know, opposite team members pinning, you know, opposite guys, you know, for the fall. But I never really seen somebody take a tilt-a-whirl suplex and turn that into, like, a cradle pin before. So I thought that was really cool.
It looks like it was rehearsed, though. Like, you could tell, like, they probably say...
It was a bit sloppy.
Yeah, it was... He's like, listen, we'll try it, and, you know, just follow my lead.
Yeah.
All right. Your 11th match on the card, your WCW heavyweight champion, the total package, Lex Luger, against one of my favorites of all time, Masahiro Chono.
The student of Lou Thesz, and I'm sure he was busting in the Japanese kids in for the match. A la Ron Simmons.
Oh, man.
I would love to see that, you know, fucking Chono doing that before Ron Simmons did it.
Should we have Masahiro Chono present at the Black Achiever Awards?
I think we should.
Yeah, I already told AA I'm throwing my hat in to be a presenter. I want to do the Lou Rawls Lifetime Achievement Award.
So, I need to be a presenter. I'm the one that brought, Black History Month to the ramp.
You did, sir. I don't see that being a problem.
I need to present whoever the main award is.
Okay, well, you need to get on...
To the chagrin of Mr. Will I Am Morgan.
You need to send him.
I would love to hear Will Morgan lose his shit because I'm presenting the top award at the Blackies or the Black Achiever
Awards. Honestly, dude, you have to call in one night to his show on Saturdays. It's a shitstorm. You got to call in and. Just call in.
Does that guy even deserve to have me on his show?
You know what? He doesn't, but you would boost their ratings up by a gazillion percent. Shout out to Will Morgan, Wrestling Call-In Show, him in Rage, every Saturday night, 11 p.m. on Rantium Radio, cheap plug. But yeah, get on that, man.
Let me say this. AA, if you're listening, I have the award. I have the statue. For the Black Achievement Awards.
Ah. All right. So again.
You cannot let anybody except for me give out the main award because I actually have the statue.
Dude, you got to get on that, man.
And I'm gonna have to speak with AA. I'm not going to leak out the statue until the appropriate time.
Yo, no. Get on that. No, send him a message.
Yeah, I certainly will.
Yeah, send him a message, man. No doubt.
He knows that the Mega Powers comes correct 100% of the time, all the time.
Of course. Of course, you're the Mega Powers.
Who knows more about black people than the Mega Powers?
Not many.
See, even the black people on the rant don't know much about black people.
So, Lex Luger defending a WCW Heavyweight Championship against Masahiro Chono.
And your boy, the CEO, vice president of Pizza Hut, Jim Herd, is there with the championship belt.
Please. My boy, he says.
Wasn't he the guy that created the Ding Dongs and the Hunchbacks?
Yeah, he was involved in the process, yes. He was involved in
and,
the process.
And what was it? True man of... white supremacy, Mr. Ole Anderson, told Mr. Jim Herd about the Hunchback, saying, Jim Herd's big thing was like, oh, the Hunchbacks, you know, you can't pin their shoulders to the mat because they have Hunchbacks.
Jesus Christ.
And then Ole Anderson replied back with, yeah, well, if I were to grab one of their fucking legs and snap it in half,
right,
they're going to give up. And then he, you know, Mr. Jim Herd, the CEO, vice president of Pizza Hut, had nothing to say to that.
Right, and partly that's the reason why wrestlers no longer are bookers, because Ole Anderson ruined it for everybody.
Yeah.
But
I think also a lot of guys ruined it after that, too.
All right, so the match goes like 15 minutes.
Lex Luger doing a lot of his standard gorilla pressing, body slamming, test the strength, screaming every chance he gets.
Yeah, that was a typical Lex move.
I thought it was pretty cool that early in the match, Luger's doing the gorilla press, body slam bullshit, and Chono just says fuck it and goes for the STF, which was his big move.
What was funny?
Immediately into
the match. Right, because I think it was a thing where he was trying to show Chono up in Chono's hometown, and I don't think Chono wanted to eat Luger's shtick up right away. You see what I'm saying? Like, I thought it was like, okay, you know what? You're going to do that shit early? Well, then fuck you. I'm going to do the STF on you.
And the fans got a nice little pop for the STF early in the match.
Yeah, if you don't know, Japanese fans are not your typical American fans. They don't scream and carry on like savages. They are very, very cordial, and they clap, and they'll ooh and ah, and they'll root for their guys, but they won't, you know, be belligerent. They don't curse and scream and hold up stupid signs, and, you know, not to say they're not, you know, that American fans aren't amazing, because they are, because they make most of the cards that you go to when you were a kid and you were a young adult, but it's just a different culture in Japan.
Yeah, you know, it's more, even to this day, a lot of the matches are, you know, competitive sports-based matches. You know, they're not super heavy on the sports entertainment, you know, grunting and, doing incredible feats of strength. It's, especially with the Tanahashi Okada match during Wrestle Kingdom 9, you know, Okada's big move is the Rainmaker.
That's right.
The short arm clothesline. And Tanahashi's blocking that move or countering it every chance he gets. So right. It's kind of showing, you know, the guy's smart and he's learning from his previous encounters with the man, whereas opposed to, Lex Luger wasn't like a guy that they were bringing to Japan all the time. You know, he was coming when WCW was in town. So, Luger's doing his shtick, you know, similar to Bill Kazmaier and all them. Pulls off the torture rack a few times. Chono, you know, brings it back to wrestling. There's one point where, you know, Luger racks him and, you know, both guys, you know, fall over the top rope. Chono's caught. Luger goes back to the rack and just leaves his limp body on the floor. Luckily, Chono makes it back in the ring for the 18 count. Luger, being who Luger is, goes back to the rack. Chono escapes. Luger hits him with a low blow in front of the referee. No DQ. This is Japan. Plus, their equipment in Japan is much different than ours. Luger elbows him in the back of the neck, which I was kind of surprised. That's usually like a go-to, refs not looking, tag match kind of ending, but hits the elbow to the back of the head and gets a three count. It retains the WCW Heavyweight Championship.
Which brings
of the world.
Of the world. Which brings us to our main event of the evening, to unify the Greatest 18 Championship and the IWGP Heavyweight Championship. Champion Ricky Choshu against Tatsumi Fujinami.
Tatsumi Fujinami is the IWGP champion.
And Ricky Choshu is the greatest.
Choshu is the greatest 18
champion, right?
Champion, which you know, we mentioned was the WWF Martial Arts Championship, which was Vince McMahon handed to Inoki at a MSG house show.
That's right. We talked about that.
Yeah, and reason why it's the Greatest 18 Championship. I'm not too clear on why the name is called Greatest 18, but apparently Inoki was starting a New Japan Hall of Fame. I'm going to take a wild guess that there was probably 18 guys that were put into it. But, you know, the championship was created to coincide with the Hall of Fame, as well as a, you know, kind of like a centerpiece to also go along with the IWGP championship. And there were only two champions. It was Choshu and Great Muda. And Great Muda ended up discarding the title in favor of the IWGP Heavyweight Championship.
Good career move.
Yeah.
Because the belt had more prestige at that point and continued on to be a significant title up until now.
Yeah.
So this was a pretty good match considering it only went 12 minutes.
Yeah, it was a pretty stiff match. You know, both guys are kind of at the height of their career, you know, at this point. You know, I would say more so Choshu, Ricky. Or, you know, sometimes they call him that. You know, a lot of Japanese wrestlers, they'll go for the just in general for Japanese culture, family name goes first, and then our first name is usually last. So Choshu Ricky, more of like an established guy at this point. He's kind of breaking away from the mid-card status, going to the, you know, top of the card. I think he was also the booker at this time, if I remember correctly. Tatsumi Fujinami, he's been around for quite a while. You know, as I mentioned before, he was a former WWF Junior Heavyweight Champion, which was the junior championship for New Japan. You know, graduated to the heavyweight division. He was the IWGP Heavyweight Champion at the time. So it's just kind of like a passing of the torch kind of match, I guess you could say.
Yeah. Choshu picking up the win.
With the Lariat, which is one of his big moves, along with the Scorpion Deathlock, which he was doing way before Sting and Bret Hart.
Lariato.
They were doing it.
Lariato.
Yeah, so this was a pretty stiff fucking match. You know, maybe not like your clothesline shoulder block
Boat
match
Casual,
from before.
Yeah.
But, you know, just, you know, stiff, you know, back suplexes, pile drivers, superplexes. You know, these guys were just bringing it to each other from start to finish. These guys are just trying to take each other out from the get-go with some heavy-ass moves, trying to get them winded, you know, as early as possible. And Lariat to Fujinami. That's one of Ricky Choshu's big moves. Gets the win.
And that's pretty much it. And there is the first super card, the super now become Wrestle Kingdom.
Yeah.
That was
it. Used to go through like several different names. Like we covered was it back in January of last year? We covered Battlefield 94, which was, you know, what it was called in 1994. This was called Super Warriors. And, you know, just other names in the past. I can't recall them at the moment, but Wrestle Kingdom is the name that's been sticking for the past 9 years. And I'm going to lay the gauntlet down. I'm going to try to make it to Wrestle Kingdom 10 for next year.
Oh, dude,
so you might have to try to get a guest sports analyst, sports entertainment wrestling analyst for the show next year.
Well, before I pull this train in and end the night, I just want to put this out there to you. I think you and I should get some of our audio-video friends together. Mm-hmm. You and I should call this match with American commentary. Just for us, just for shits and giggles. We should
which
get
match?
The entire card.
Oh, Wrestle Kingdom 9.
No. This one.
Oh, this one.
Yeah, I think we should call it. I think
Super Warriors 92.
Yep, I think you and I should just for on a side thing. We'll make audio of it, obviously, but we'll make video of it too. We'll get the video.
We'll make an MP3.
Yeah, well, we'll get a whole card.
Well, wait a second. A lot of people don't have New Japan World.
No. So we'll get the DVD of the original card.
Okay.
And we'll make a video. We'll dub. We'll overdub the track, and we'll do American commentary.
Sounds good to me.
I think it'd be a nice practice for us if any of these indie feds want to, have a shot at have a shot at greatness. Yeah, absolutely.
They too can have the greatest play-by-play team.
It's true.
The greatest sports journalists. The greatest broadcast journalist of all time.
Yeah, it's true. I
of this modern day.
Absolutely. 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 All right, that's going to do it for us tonight, man. I apologize for the audio. I apologize for the dead air for a couple of seconds there. I'll fix that on the download. I'm going to try to salvage whatever's left of this. Hopefully we don't have this problem next week. I mean, everything is working fine. All the equipment's in its right place and stuff, so it might be just a connection. It could be anything. It's electronics, man. It can't.
You know.
So we lost some people too on the chat, I think, because of it too. So I apologize. But we have a nice month of throwbacks for you.
What's the next one? Next one is Rumble 94, right?
I believe so. Yes.
That was probably one of my last favorite Royal Rumbles of all time.
Yeah. So check up
stacked undercard. Probably the first controversial Royal Rumble, which they sadly tried reproducing years later with Cena and Batista.
Yeah.
Well, this was the first time that they had dual winners for a Royal Rumble, and possibly one of the last great pay per views before WWF had their dark period of the mid '90s.
That's pretty much it. We got, and of course, February Black History Month. We're doing a whole thing again like we did last year. Just keep in touch with us. Facebook, TurnbuckleThrowbacks.com, ShiningWizardsNetwork.com, Rant EM Radio, Audio Boom, Stitcher, iTunes, all the regular spots. You know how we do. Geek Life Radio.
And you know
every
what?
Saturday.
I'm going to lay down my petition to the man, to the boss man at the Rant, Mr. Double A, to have me present the main award for the Blackies or the Black Achiever Awards, whatever they're calling it this year. And I'm going to present the statue for the for that main award.
All right.
I have it in my house.
There you have it. Ladies and gentlemen, Happy New Year. And thank you so much for hanging out with us tonight. We appreciate it as always. And we'll be back next week. Same bat time, same bat channel. Dave, any parting words before we bounce?
I just want to say I'm really glad that a lot of our listeners got to check out Wrestle Kingdom 9, whether they got it legit or through a feed. And, I'm glad there's a lot of people that are, catching on to, perfect alternative to what's on television right now, WWE or TNA or whatever. Because it's is fucking good. The Japanese stuff, New Japan, Pro Wrestling Noah, All Japan Pro Wrestling, Dragon Gates, Wrestle One, all of them. There's so much great shit out there.
Lucha Underground, Impact is now new and improved, apparently. I mean, if you're in a spot where there's good indies, check them out. There's alternatives, man. And of course, keep up with all the shows and get all your good stuff going on, and we'll keep you informed. We'll keep you entertained, hopefully, and it's going to be a fantastic year for the Rant, for the Shining Wizards Network, And we thank everybody for participating and hanging out with us every week and on download. We really appreciate all the fan base and all the love. So, on behalf of the Mega Powers, Phil Reyes signing off, bidding you adieu. Avoid the clap. Don't get arrested. Take care of animals. And see you next week.
Give your mama a hug and a kiss.
Give your mama a hug and a kiss. Tell your lover. Good night, kids.